Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd of the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo, and it's a pretty empty studio in here tonight, Birdman. It looks like it's just you and me.
I know, man. It's like the other half of our cast got snapped out of existence, almost.
Oh, that's a joke with some baggage. And also a hint as to what we're going to be discussing this week. This week we are discussing probably the biggest and most anticipated movie of all time, Avengers.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good. And so was hanging out with his grandson.
Avengers Endgame, which, wow, we are... Whew, this is just as much a review as it is a therapy session, because, my God, so much to unpack in this movie.
Absolutely. I mean, this movie was a juggernaut at the box office, $1.2 billion globally. It's gonna come for Avatar in, my guess is, less than 2 weeks.
So, James Cameron's sleeping with one eye open. But of course, there is procedure to follow, so we are going to begin, as always, with Ask a Geek. Here's a question here from Jamal, and it's for you, Mike. And he asks, what is your favorite setting for Dungeons & Dragons?
My favorite setting is probably Ravenloft. I'm actually playing with my Terrible Warriors group, which you can find over at terriblewarriors.com. I'm doing a session set in Ravenloft where basically my guys are building an army against Strahd von Zarevich. They've united werewolves against him. They got an incubus and a succubus, brother and sister, working against him. And now they've been transported to Faerun, where they're looking for a fabled sword that might be able to help defeat Strahd. And it's fucking intense. I love the gothic horror setting of Ravenloft because it draws upon all that Bram Stoker like imagery and everything, plus any weird gothic horror thing you can draw inspiration from. And it's fucking badass. Second favorite setting, I'm a huge fan of the idea of it. And it's something called Spelljammer, where basically picture a pirate ship, except instead of going through water, it flies through space. I think that's just a really weird and cool idea, definitely born out of the 1980s era of D&D weirdness, and I think that's awesome.
Okay, and let's see here now. This next question here comes from Peter, and it's, again, for all of us. The question is, JRPGs or Western RPGs? And I want to say that for the last few years, I really haven't played very many JRPGs, because I'm a huge fan of the old school Final Fantasies, like from 12 and before. And so many JRPGs that come out now are just so out there that I haven't been able to get into them. I have been kind of sucked back in with a couple. I think I mentioned last week. I've been really invested in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I've also been playing Persona 5 and really enjoying that. Although I'm kind of a little, I mean, there's things about the pacing that I kind of raise my eyebrow at. But that's because this is my first Persona game, even though I have Persona 3 and 4 in my collection and just never cracked them open and played them. So.
I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Like, I used to really like JRPGs way back in the day. I haven't picked up too many modern ones with the exception of Persona 5. I like the Western RPG as it is a little bit more streamlined. I think my most favorite ones for Western RPGs, which, no surprise, Skyrim. But if I'm looking for a more traditional RPG experience, basically anything from the BioWare camp. Although, that being said, I didn't like Dragon Age, and I frigging tried.
Really?
Yeah, I just couldn't get into it. I mean, I like the idea of the setting in the world. I have all the tabletop role-playing books for that setting, and I like the world, I like the characters, but I don't like the games themselves. And my friend Alex is like, oh, if you like Mass Effect, you'll like Dragon Age. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll give it a whirl. If it's like medieval Mass Effect, maybe I'll dig it. And I just couldn't get into it, and I fucking tried for... I played through about half of Dragon Age 1, couldn't dig it. Dragon Age 2, I tried for a few hours, couldn't dig it. Dragon Age 3, again, few hours, couldn't get into it. And I feel really disappointed that I couldn't experience the story of this epic series, but just, it bores the ever-living crap out of me.
Is it the story that bores you, or is it the gameplay?
It's the gameplay. I mean, the story is really cool.
Now I have a question. Are you playing on a console or a PC?
Console.
Okay, that might be your issue, because... based on what I played of it, mechanically, it's a game that's much better suited to PC.
Oh, in that case, I'll never play it because I hate PC gaming.
Yeah, as we established in our last episode. It's because of the interface and how the game works mechanically. I would actually say it's closer to Knights of the Old Republic than Mass Effect in terms of how you interface with the game. So, yeah, it's definitely something that's I found to be a much more pleasant experience on PC than console. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. Your mileage may vary. Let's see here now. We got a question here from... Let me find it here. Okay, here we go. We got a question here from Jacob Salo, and he says, one of the big things that got me into reading comics were the cartoons based off DC and Marvel. Question for everyone in the comics. What was the first cartoon you saw based off of a comic book? His was the Fox Kids X-Men cartoon. And that was actually my first one, too. Actually, you know what? Scratch that. My very first one, the one that set the bar to which all others were judged, was the 1992 Batman animated series.
I'm going to date myself here because I'm older than fucking dirt. That would be the DC Super Friends. That's how old I am. Those were the first ones that I ever truly saw. Then it was, the 1990s X-Men and Batman the Animated Series. But yeah, I remember watching Super Friends, and I also remember watching Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends as well. And that kind of set the bar kind of low for Spider-Man cartoons. Even the 60s Spider-Man, I remember watching a fair chunk. So
that was the one that was actually narrated by Stan Lee, wasn't it?
Yep. And the guy who voices Spider-Man is Canadian. I think he's still alive, too.
Nice. Okay, let's see here now. We got a question here from Erica, and this one's for you, Mike. What's the convention scene like in Canada? What are some of the big conventions?
Some of the big conventions in Canada, one of the biggest is Anime North, which has something like 100,000 people go to it, like every year, I think, or some ridiculous number like that. We have Fan Expo in Toronto, which happens towards the end of August, towards the Labor Day long weekend. Con Bravo is a fairly big up-and-coming convention. It has been for the last 10 years or so. So it's got a fairly big draw as well. We used to have quite a number of pony conventions, though that number has dropped off in the last couple of years. I think the one I went to was Canterlot, if I remember correctly. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. The con scene in Canada is alive and well. The cosplay scene up here is phenomenal. Some of the local conventions are a lot of fun. Some of the smaller gaming focused ones are pretty neat, but the big one is Anime North for sure.
Okay. And we got a question here from Larry, and this one's for me, and he asked if I still kept up with the Retro Game Treasure subscription that I was. What he's talking about is, if you look on our YouTube channel, you'll see I did a couple of pickups videos where I unboxed. It's basically a loot crate style service called Retro Game Treasure, where you subscribe to it, and every month they send you a box with maybe like, you know, four or five retro video games. And yeah, I have still kept up with that. Because it, every box that I have gotten, I've been subscribed for about, I want to say a year now. Every box that I've gotten, there's always been at least one game that I've been really happy to have in my collection. Like this, in this month's box, it just came like a week or so ago. I got Epic Mickey 2 for the Wii, which is one that I've always meant to pick up, but just never came across or never got around to actually putting money on it. And then the month before that, this one was actually kind of funny because I'd been talking with a friend about how much I wanted to find a copy of Diddy Kong Racing for my collection. Got my retro game box last month. Diddy Kong Racing right in there. So someone was reading my mind. So it's something that I kind of keep up just kind of like as a curiosity, because in addition to you know, there being a game in there that I absolutely really would like to have in my collection, there's also at least one that I've get really kind of curious about. Like in this month's box, I got Jet Moto 2, which I remember that being you know, a pretty popular racing game back in the PS1 days, but I never got a chance to play it myself. It's like kind of a hover motorcycle racer. So I've been exposed to a lot of curiosities that, you know, I ordinarily would be kind of off my beaten path and I wouldn't normally look at otherwise. So it's something that I'd recommend if you have maybe a little extra cash to spare, but I wouldn't use it as like your sole avenue of building a game collection.
It's basically there if you don't want to go retro hunting every weekend. It's something you can just wait by your mailbox for.
Yeah, the reason why I wouldn't recommend it as being your sole avenue is you can't really order specific games. Like, you can tell them like what games you already have in your collection and what systems you collect for, but it's a random assortment every month. So if you're looking to collect like a specific type of game, like a specific genre, it's not really suited for that. But if you've got like, you know, an extra, you know, $30 a month or so lying around, and you're looking just out of sheer morbid curiosity, it's definitely worth checking out. I will say this month's box is the first one that I've gotten that didn't have some kind of Japanese import game in it, which is the other reason why you keep a hold of it, is because every month since I've been subscribed, I've gotten at least one Japanese Famicom or Super Famicom game, and I've gotten some really weird fucking ones.
But I'm guessing all these ones are probably common to uncommon, correct?
Yes and no. The first couple months I was subscribed, actually, each month in a row, I got the Japanese versions of one of the Dragon Warrior games. Dragon Quest, as it's known in Japan. Which the Japanese versions are pretty inexpensive. They run for about, let's say, $5 to $10. But the American version, like the first month I got the Japanese version of Dragon Quest IV. Which, if you go looking for Dragon Warrior 4 on the NES, that usually runs about $100. Now I've got the Japanese version, I can put it in my Retron 5, load up a translation patch, and I can play it with absolutely no problem. I've saved myself about $90. Nice. Yeah. So it's something worth checking into. Once again, that's RetroGameTreasure.com is the website. It's about $30 to $40 a month, I think. I'll have to check my bank statement and find out. So, you know, it's I would say check it out for about, say, 6 months, and if it doesn't grab you after that, then, you know, drop it. But I'm hanging on to it for now. And so with that, that's all the Ask Geek questions that we have time for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in to us. As always, you can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air, so go ahead and get those questions in. You might just get it read on the show. And so with that, now that we've had our vegetables, let's get down to the meat of this discussion. So let's get your tissues at the ready, because I'm sure that one of us is going to cry at least once over the course of this episode as we discuss our main discussion topic, and that is Avengers Endgame. Like I said, this is probably the most anticipated movie ever. And wow, did it, a lot to unpack here. So Mike, let's start with you. What are your first general thoughts on Avengers Endgame?
I thought it was a great end to the 11-year journey Marvel Studios has taken us on a ride for. I mean, everybody got their individual character moments to shine. We got a lot of closing of the loop for a lot of characters. And I left the theater feeling remarkably satisfied, although I did spoil it for myself before I went into the theater because I'm impatient as fuck. But I still wasn't underwhelmed. I was overwhelmed at times with emotion and joy. There were scenes in particular that the entire theater clapped and went, yeah, at. And that's a movie experience that's, if you see this with the right group of people, it can really be a cinema-defining experience for you. I was actually talking about this on Twig this past weekend, saying that this is the new generation Star Wars. The next the Star Wars movies, yeah, people get excited for them. Yeah, people dress up. But this is a cultural thing that we've only had for the last 11 years or so. And people get excited for them. They are event viewing. And going to the theater, nobody did anything like being a jerk during this. My theater was dead quiet except when people were laughing or crying when they were supposed to. There wasn't anybody being a jerk. Everybody was just in the moment. And I haven't had a theater be like that in years. I think maybe Star Wars Revenge of the Sith might have been the only other time I can remember a theater being that quiet. But for 3 hours, everybody was absorbed in that world. And that's unlike anything I've ever experienced in a movie theater before.
Yeah, I gotta say that I walked away from this movie extremely satisfied, despite some early worries. But we'll get to that as we discuss the plot of this movie. Yeah, so like I said, I mean this is the culmination of like 11 years, more than 20 films, and it's a very bittersweet experience to see this arc come to its end. And even though we know that there's going to be a phase four, there's going to be more after this. I don't think that we'll ever see a film that will ascend to this level of hype and excitement that this movie has generated. Like you said, it's solidified Marvel movies as a cultural phenomena. And so going to what you said about behavior in the theater, when I went to see it, we did have one person who kind of stepped out of line. Someone brought their baby to the theater, and then at the bit right at the beginning where they go to confront Thanos, the baby started crying. And let me tell you, I have never seen somebody haul ass out of a theater so fast in my life. Like they left like the Back to the Future fire trails as they sprinted out of the theater with this kid. So with that, before we go any further, we are going to go ahead and send our trademark Nerd of the Third Power spoiler alert that from this point on, we are going to be discussing the plot of the film and all its nitty-gritty details. So if you have not seen Endgame, by God, stop this episode now, go see it, and then come back because spoilers ahoy. So let's get down now to discussing the plot of this film. And the movie opens up, a few weeks or so after Infinity War. Captain Marvel has come to the Avengers compound and joined forces with the Avengers. And they managed to track down Thanos on this faraway planet based on the signature of that's left behind by the usage of the stones. And they go to confront him, and they discover that he has used the stones to actually destroy the Infinity Stone so that what he's done cannot be undone. And this whole thing sends the Avengers into a very depressed loop because, I mean, it's pretty much solidified that they have lost and there's no way for them to fix this. And so the movie time skips ahead 5 years. And it turns out that if you recall at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Ant-Man was lost in the quantum zone. He shrunk down to go on in there for an experiment when the snap happened. And he winds up accidentally coming back because of, cat stepping on the keyboard, literally. And he comes up with a plan to use the quantum zone to travel back in time to get the Infinity Stones when they still existed and use them, bring them to the present to undo the snap. And this is where my real, this is where I started to get worried with the film, because one thing that I really think is kind of a lazy storytelling trope is using time travel to fix the unfixable. But this movie, I feel like, actually did it really well. And I feel like it was like the first half hour or so of the movie with the time travel plot is basically just fan service. It's basically going back and doing all these nods to the previous films. And there were a lot of neat little funny moments in there, which this movie really needed after that that opening scene. It needed some moments of levity. So let's start by examining sort of that time travel arc. So, Mike, what did you think of the time travel arc of this movie?
I like how it used Dragon Ball Z time travel rules, where basically the future is set, and if you do something in the past, it creates a new alternate timeline. So the future's already happened. You can't do anything to fix that. But you can go back and bring things forward to help make the current time work. So I thought that was interesting, and they kind of... one of my favorite lines from this was, "You're telling me Back to the Future was bullshit?"
Yeah, that was a great moment. There's basically there's a moment where I think it's just War Machine, Ant-Man, and the Hulk, who we see a merged Hulk. We've got Bruce Banner and the Hulk kind of merged together as the Professor persona, and Hulk is like, you know, what tells you that time travel works this way? And War Machine just starts listing off a bunch of time travel movies, like Back to the Future, Terminator, yada 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 yada. And it was just a great little moment. I absolutely love that. Another moment that I really enjoyed was the bit where Captain America has to fight himself. And they've been making some comments about how subpar Captain America's costume was in the first Avengers movie, which that really was a bad costume. Mm-hmm. And Iron Man's talking about how, like, you know, Cap, that costume, it really doesn't do anything for your ass. And Ant-Man's like, I just want you to know, sir, that I disagree. That's America's ass. And then later when Cap has to beat the shit out of his past self, he looks down and is like, that is America's ass. But I tell you what, looking back on it, yeah, that movie really, this movie really needed to open with some levity, because its initial opening moments are just so depressing and somber. Like, the very first thing you see when the movie begins is Hawkeye is with his family. He's teaching his daughter how to shoot a bow and arrow. His kids are playing catch, and his wife is preparing a picnic. And then they all just disappear. And that's like, you look at that, it's like you just see Hawkeye's soul just break when this happens, and he winds up becoming this sort of assassin type mercenary called the Ronin, and he basically just goes on a murder spree, and you see just how awful the snap has affected the world. You see Yankee Stadium just completely empty, and like there are few things in life that are more distressing than seeing, you know, a city like New York that's normally so vibrant and full of life just empty.
Well, yeah, that, and it was said by Kevin Feige, when Thanos snapped, he took out half of all life. That includes animals, too, and plants. So the decimation took out a lot more than just people. So the world having to rebuild from that, yeah, the cities may not be as filled as they once were because the resources aren't going to be there necessarily. There's one line that I found really interesting from Cap in the 5 years. Forward thing where he's talking to the support group, or maybe he's talking to Black Widow, I can't remember which. He talked about seeing whales and a pod out by one of the New York City bridges, and I thought that was really cool, thinking, wow, the whales are making a comeback. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. excuse me. But it's like, you know, one of the first kudos that I have to put towards the acting in this movie is, like I said, just how broken everybody is. Like Black Widow, she's become sort of the new team leader, and she's running basically all this all these operations to try and, you know, basically just keep things from descending even further into chaos. And you can see that, like I really got the impression in that scene where she's having the meeting with, you know, everyone spread across the world, that like she hasn't slept in like a week. And this has just been her life for the last like 5 years. And just to see these larger than life heroes just so utterly broken, like, it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool, at least from my perspective, just to see how the world reacted to this. You see, I can't pronounce the character's name from Wakanda, Oki or something.
Okoye, I think.
Okoye, yeah. There was her, Rocket, Captain Marvel, and War Machine just kind of giving updates on the world. And there was kind of a clever Easter egg hidden in there. They talk about, oh, there's an earthquake underneath the something Atlantic plate. That's a Namor reference. So maybe we're going to see the Atlanteans finally come into the Marvel Cinematic Universe at some point. Because I always thought Namor was way cooler than Aquaman. But Aquaman's costume is cooler. Anyway, it was kind of cool just to see how the world reacted. And Nat's trying to hold together what's left of the Avengers to keep the world and the larger universe safe.
Yeah. So what were some of your, some other favorite moments from the time travel arc?
I like how Paul Rudd gets turned into a baby, then an old man. And he's like, I'm not sure which one peed my pants, old me or young me, or maybe just me. I'm not sure. I thought that was really clever. I also liked how they referred to it as a time heist, where Ant-Man really has a really clever idea for going back and getting all these things. Plus, when they start going out through the different eras in history to recover the stones, where Professor Hulk has to talk to the Ancient One during the Battle of New York, and she explains, you can grab the stones, but you're going to create all these alternate lines unless you return them back to where you're taking them. What you want to do may make things worse. And he's like, well, we hadn't thought about that, but here's our plan. And then they all kind of get together. I like the time travel in this was kind of handled all Doctor Who. It's very timey-wimey. Don't think too hard about it. It just works. Plus them going to Voromir, which I didn't expect Black Widow to die. Everyone expected Hawkeye. And I thought ultimately when Professor Hulk snaps at the end of the movie, it would bring back Black Widow. I was waiting for that because that's one of the spoilers that I read. When she didn't come back, I was like, well, fuck me. I really liked her.
Yeah, that was, oh man, like, and the thing is, like, the movie bait and switches you with that scene, I think five times within a space of, like, 30 seconds, because they're talking about, like, the whole thing's up, they're talking about, like, okay, one of us has to go, I think we know who it has to be, and then Hawkeye's like, I think we're talking about two different people, and then they start fighting each other, fighting over, you know, which one of them is going to sacrifice themselves. Neither one of them wants to see the other one die. They each want to sacrifice themselves. And you think that like it's gonna be Hawkeye, but then like just at the last second, Nat gets them into this situation where it's like either he lets her go or they both die, and it's just so heartbreaking to see. Just because like this is basically the last real family member that Hawkeye has now in this world, and it just, oh man, I'm getting teary eyed just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where I was like, I can't believe they had the guts to kill her, considering, hey, don't you have a movie coming up in like a few months, which supposedly the Black Widow movie is going to be set after the first Avengers but before Age of Ultron. I'm fine with that. I think that's cool. Because I've always liked Scarlett Johansson in these movies. I like how once the Russo brothers got a hold of the character, they gave her a lot more to do other than, hey, I look pretty and kick ass. Especially with The Winter Soldier and Civil War. They definitely developed her a lot more. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Nat. Maybe we'll finally find out what happened in Budapest between her and Hawkeye. Because they keep referencing it in every movie, so.
And then if we're going to talk about characters who got broken, we have to bring up Beer Belly Thor.
Oh, I love Dad Bod Thor.
Yeah, so after the 5 years after the snap, we find that we go to New Asgard, which is this little fishing village up I want to say like Northern Europe, it looks like.
Norway, yeah.
Yeah, Norway. And Thor has just like dude has just let himself go. He looks like The comparison that I really like was they compared him to the Big Lebowski, and he actually does dress like the dude at one point in the film. But like, it's just it's heartbreaking to see this character just fall so low. Like, he basically becomes just this angry, surly drunk. And it's so jarring to see. And the thing is like, they don't just like retcon that away. He basically, his character arc is him trying to redeem himself for what he sees as his failure to kill Thanos in Infinity War. And it's just so heartbreaking to watch him go through this arc. Cause like, I can't even describe it. Like, there's so much that beats him down throughout this movie. Like, when he goes back to Asgard, to retrieve the Reality Stone with Rocket, and he winds up running into his mother, and he knows that, you know, this day is the day that she dies, and they get to have like one final conversation, and it's so heartbreaking to see his emotional journey throughout this film.
Yeah, I mean, because he really he's lost his brother, he's lost his mother, he's lost his people, he really has lost his way, and he really is kind of like how Tony was a victim of PTSD after the first Battle of New York. Now Thor's that, and you're seeing the after effects of that, whereas Iron Man was able to put himself back together by overcoming his anxiety and whatnot. Thor's mental health battle hasn't gone so well, and he's living with Korg and the other guy playing Fortnite, which I thought was really clever, by the way. And just seeing him saying, nope, not going to do it, can't do it, you can't ask for my help, I'm not going to help you. And then eventually they kind of trick him into it, but it's a good arc for him to come around, although I could make an argument for mental health in this movie that they didn't portray it as well as they could have, but it still worked for what Thor's arc is supposed to be, especially towards the end of the movie where he joins the Guardians of the Galaxy to go find himself. He's not a king, he's not a ruler. He's a warrior. He's a fighter. He's a hero, but he's not the one that New Asgard needs. That's what Valkyrie's supposed to go do.
Yeah. And then one last character arc that we got to bring up because of how essential it is to this movie, and that's Iron Man and his story throughout this film. Because when this movie opens up, like, he is just like on the end of his fucking rope. He is like... He when he finally makes it back to Earth, he's like, no, screw you all, we've lost, there's no way that we're going to be able to fix this, I'm out of here. And then he basically goes off, marries Pepper, buys that farm that he talked about at the end of Age of Ultron, has a kid, and then when Cap and the others come back with the time heist idea, he's just so vehemently opposed to it. He's like, you know, no, I've got a new life now, I've moved on, you guys need to do the same. But then in the back of his mind, you know, he knows he could probably figure this thing out. And when he does, he has like this moment of conscience where it's like, look, if we go back and we do this, then everything that we have now disappears. We, you know, our marriage, our daughter vanishes. And like, I could just, you know, bury it out in the backyard and never talk about it again. And then Pepper's like, well, yeah, but could you really live with yourself afterwards? And I love that they maintained that thread. Like, that's the one condition that Tony has throughout this whole thing. It's like, look, I'll help you with this, but we're not hitting an undo button. We're bringing everybody back, but not changing anything else that's happened over the last 5 years. We're bringing the people forward. We're not going back.
Yeah, which I thought that was an interesting... I don't know if you'd call it a plot hole or something else, because everybody who was brought back from the snap... For them, 5 minutes has passed. For the rest of the world, 5 years has passed. Which, that's neither here nor there. I guess it's a nitpick, especially when you look at Spider-Man Far From Home, which comes out in just a few months. I guess we'll talk about that when that movie comes out. But yeah, I like how he's like, the last 5 years have to stand, because we don't know what'll happen, and I'm not sacrificing everything that I've built. And... I don't know. It's a different side to Iron Man. I'm really glad we got a chance to see. And I like how his arc is completed in this. How he got everything he wanted, but it cost him everything. And even Doctor Strange said, I can't tell you. If I do, you won't do it. And I was like, because if Tony knew he was going to die, he might not have done it because of Morgan.
Yeah. So, and then I will, as we segue into the next arc, We have to talk about Nebula in this movie and how central she was to this film, because it's because of her going back in time to help get the stones that Thanos actually gets past. Thanos gets clued in to what they're doing, because somehow somehow or other it's explained that present Nebula and past Nebula wind up, their neural networks wind up crossing wires, and past Nebula can see everything that present Nebula is doing. So she winds up swapping places with her future counterpart to act as sort of a mole and brings Thanos' army forward into the present, and kickstarts just this epic war scene. Like, I don't think I've seen a battle scene this epic since Return of the King.
Ready Player One is the only other time I can think of something this scale.
Yeah. And it's just, oh man, there's so much that happens in this battle scene. So many cool moments, so many neat little
playing with every single action figure you've ever owned.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's one of the things that I think is really great about it is how, one, everybody gets a moment to shine, and two, it doesn't wear out. It's paced in such a way that you don't wind up fatigued. Because if you go back and you listen to our review of Transformers, I think it was Dark of the Moon, I mentioned that the whole half of that movie is just one long action scene. I was like, you know, by the end of it, I was just exhausted. I wasn't able to keep up with it because it was just, you know, so fast and so furious that like it just became exhausting. But this movie actually managed to pace its war scene, its war sequence so well that like it's not one large action sequence. It's a bunch of small little set pieces that just kind of segue into each other. So I guess let's before we get to that though, we got to talk about kind of the let's see, there's a time heist. Then I feel like there's a bit of the movie that we're missing.
I guess we could talk about Cap's arc, because you look at it in what he's had to endure, being frozen in the ice, leaving Peggy Carter behind. And when he goes back to the 70s, when they fuck up in 2012 and they have to go back to the 70s and he sees her again, you do see a shift in him where, like, he kind of sees, man, I haven't seen you in X amount of years. The last time I saw you, I was at your bedside when you passed away. So I like how that pays off at the end of the movie, where Cap goes back in time to put all the stones back. But he decides to stay in 1940 with Peggy and have that last dance that he promised her in the first Avenger. Because I didn't expect the shield to go to Sam Wilson. I know he becomes the next Captain America at some point during the comics, but I think all of us expected Bucky to be the next Cap.
Yeah, I for me it was almost a coin toss, because both Bucky and Falcon have been Captain America. Bucky assumed the shield for a year or so after Captain America, quote unquote, died after Civil War. So it really could have gone either way. But yeah, no, I'm not surprised that they went with Falcon, because he is currently carrying the shield in the comics. So that made sense. In that same sequence, we've got to talk about Tony meeting up with his father, Howard, and what that means for his arc, because one of the things that has been kind of, you know, going through Tony's mind throughout his whole arc is how he felt like his father, you know, didn't really love him, didn't really, you know, wasn't really the most ideal father. And now he's basically meets his father like just before Tony himself is actually born, and he sees like how nervous Howard is about being a father. It's like, you know, that, you know, Howard's like, basically, you know, I hope that he doesn't become as much of a screw up as I was. And Tony, for the first time, sees that his dad is really a human being, just like him. And I thought that was a really neat little moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, So they get the stones. They go back. They build a new red Infinity Gauntlet, an Iron Gauntlet, which I thought was really cool. They do the snap. They bring everybody back, and then the war sequence happens. And we finally get one of the moments that I really love from the war sequence is we finally get to see the payoff from that one little throwaway half second of Age of Ultron where they're doing the hammer contest and Cap goes to lift the hammer and you see it shift just ever so slightly. We finally get to see Captain America wield Mjolnir.
Yeah, my theater was ecstatic when that happened. It was electric. How many people were like, yeah, Cap and Mjolnir, holy shit. It was really cool. And I knew this was coming from the spoilers that I read, but I didn't believe it until I saw it. And it was just such an epic moment because I've seen this happen in the comics before. And it's something else to see in motion.
Yeah.
Like the entire fight with Thanos was so well choreographed, even with his giant double-bladed sword cutting through Cap's shield. Cap's got the shit kicked out of him and he stands up. And then when he just says, "Avengers assemble." My God, I've been waiting years for that.
My theater erupted in applause when he said that. And the thing I like about it is, like, you know, in the comics, so often that phrase is it's shouted, it's a war cry, but this time around he says it's kind of really subdued, like he's like, okay, like let's get down to business. It's less of a it's less of a war cry and more of a pre-ass kicking one liner. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved how subdued that was, especially because the thing is, like, if you think about it. You know, if he actually shouted it after that whole bit where he's swinging around Mjolnir, it really would have felt really hammy and over the top and would really kind of have ruined the moment. Another moment that I really enjoyed was where after, you know, the Avengers compound gets blown up and you see all these Doctor Strange portals opening up and you see Black Panther and Shuri coming out with the Wakandan army behind them and all the mages and basically all these different armies from across the Marvel films coming out and just this giant assemblage of like I can only describe it as like the assembly of the Battle of the Five Armies. It's just such an epic moment.
Yeah, it was something to see. I mean, I really wish I'd seen this in IMAX because I only saw this in a regular 2D screen, but it was. It was incredible to behold. I mean, I really can't think how movies are going to change after this. I mean, Endgame, I really don't think it's unfair to say this rewrites the playbook on how you do event type movies from here on out. Like, there's fan service moments, there's genuine payoff moments. Is the movie perfect? No. But in terms of an 11-year journey, this is what we got. People are satisfied. People are happy. $1.2 billion can't be wrong. So what are you going to say, right? I mean, we live in a golden age of pop culture right now where we're spoiled by choice. And you look at the competitors that Marvel has, so to speak. It has the DCEU and good luck. And it has Star Wars to compete against it. I don't know where movies go from here. Think about this, 22 films to come to this moment, and we still have another Marvel movie this year. And then we'll find out what happens for Phase 4. Which will likely be Avengers versus X-Men or Fantastic Four or something like that. We'll wait and see. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm truly in awe of how things have gone with Marvel. With that big battle scene, by having Spider-Man have his moment with Tony Stark, when everybody cried when Tony and Spider-Man said, "Mr. Stark, I don't want to go," to, "Hey, Mr. Stark, I was dead and now I'm back and you're here and please don't go," and all that stuff. And it was, I don't know, I'm just kind of rambling now, but
man,
that's the effect this movie has on you.
I did not think that they were going to actually kill Tony Stark. I thought that they were going to, honestly, I thought if they were going to kill anybody, it would have been Captain America. But the climax of the film where Thanos basically has the new Infinity Gauntlet and he's about to do the snap and Tony winds up stealing the Infinity Stones off of it and having them, you know, merge into his armor And then that just that epic comeback, you know, where Thanos is like, I am inevitable. And Stark is just like, and I'm Iron Man. And then to have him do the snap to wipe out Thanos and his armies. And then to have him actually die, like, oh my God, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. Certainly I was weeping openly. Cause like, I didn't expect him to do that. Like, I had prepared myself for Captain America to die, not Iron Man.
Yeah. Because you expected Iron Man to be alive for the next Spider-Man movie. I mean, who's going to supply the Avengers with tech and all their stuff now? I mean, I guess that falls on Professor Hulk now.
And that's even if he comes back, because it, I mean, well, we'll get in that down the line, but it's just, it's so unexpected, but it's also such a satisfying wrap up, like with the eulogy and the funeral, and you see that panning shot of just about everyone who's been a major character in a Marvel film. Like, they even brought back the kid from Iron Man 3.
That surprised me. A lot of the theater was like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, I didn't know who it was either until I went and looked it up. The one character that I was disappointed that didn't show up in that scene, Agent Coulson. So
Coulson would have been a nice callback. I would have appreciated, and this shows my Captain Marvel fanboyism, it would have been neat if Captain Marvel had been holding Goose the Cat. But still, that would have been a small little nod for me. But still, yeah, I mean, that funeral scene, a lot of people you could hear openly crying in my theater. I can't remember a movie ever doing that wasn't fucking Titanic.
Yeah, and it's just, well, I mean, because things like, yeah, like, people have grown up with these movies. Like, this, I mean, it's fair to say that, like, there are people who these movies have been with them their entire lives, and now we're coming, like, literally to the end of an era.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when I used to read Marvel Comics back in the day, Iron Man used to be a C or a B-list hero at best. It was Iron Man, who gives a shit. When 2008 came around and he got his own movie, when this was the experiment with Jon Favreau, people knew this was going to be something special. This was going to be something different. When they started to expand the thing, when there was the first post-credits scene of, I want to talk to you about the Avengers initiative and all that shit, people had no idea. Like I said, this is this generation's Star Wars. And it's incredible. As you said, people have grown up with it. This is people's childhoods. This, I don't know. I mean, I grew up on Star Wars. I remember being there for the last time the special editions were in theaters. I grew up through the prequel trilogy. I was there in line every single day for them. But the Marvel movies have always been event viewing, and it's united people in a way I've never seen outside of these big, huge properties. And generally the population has such a goodwill towards it. And like I said, I've seen one or two dissenters online about Endgame, but when they speak about the cultural impact, it unites everybody. And in this world where we need all the smiles we can possibly get, it's nice to see a movie, an entertainment event, bring everybody together, even if it's just for 3 hours.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, it's like you said, where do we go from here? How could they possibly follow this up? And and one of the things this is where I kind of have to say I'm a little bit worried about the Marvel films going forward, because so many of the pillars of this universe, this is their last movie. Like, you know, we know that Robert Downey Jr. is not coming back. We know that Chris Evans is coming back. Scarlett Johansson has one more movie and then she's done. I don't know if we're going to see Chris Hemsworth in. He might show up in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, because he pretty much joined the Guardians at the end of the film, didn't he?
Yep, pretty much. He's like, we're now the Asgardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, but like, you know, now it's pretty much a changing of the guard, and I don't know how receptive the movie going audience is going to be to the new MCU going forward. So it'll be something to watch and keep an eye on.
I mean, if I had to predict what the next big bad's going to be, Annihilus, Kang the Conqueror, because now they've opened up time travel, or maybe Galactus, because now they can build towards the Fantastic Four, or someone suggested this, and this would be really fucking cool, especially if they did it right, Onslaught from Marvel. If you did House of M and Onslaught, I'd be okay with that. Hell, a big screen Onslaught? Holy shit, take my money now.
I don't know, because I'm old enough to remember the Onslaught arc, and it wasn't that great.
Yeah, well, don't forget, the original Infinity Gauntlet, they changed everything up too, right? Because where's fucking Adam Warlock? Where's Pip the friggin' troll? Things have changed. This new Marvel could pull off Onslaught, especially given the creative direction of the people that Kevin Feige pulls in. However, a big loss of the MCU is not having Joe and Anthony Russo anymore. They said they're done.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here, director-wise?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the make or break thing. Is who are they going to get to actually run the show now? So, all right. So we're kind of running close to the end of the line here. So, what were some other major standout moments in this film to you? What were some moments that made you cheer, made you cry, made you laugh?
Tony Stark meeting Rocket Raccoon for the first time. He's like, I thought that was Build-A-Bear. That made me die. let me see. Them playing Fortnite, I thought was tremendously funny when he gets on the mic and starts trash talking the 15-year-old kid.
He's back and he called me a dickhead again.
And I love that guy. I'm trying to think of what else was another great moment. Seeing Nebula, evil Nebula, use the Pym particles to bring back Thanos' ship. That was clever. Never saw that coming. I'm thinking, man, she really is fucking evil. That's cool. So yeah, those were some of my moments.
I'll tell you, this is more of a design choice than an actual moment. But I really like Captain America's costume in this movie because they finally brought in the feathered chest plate design from the actual comics.
Yes, that was a great design choice.
Yeah, and I was like, they finally brought that in, and I only noticed that like in one of those shots after he's been, you know, knocked on his ass by Thanos, and you finally got to see the texturing of the costume. It's like, oh my god, they finally brought in the feathering. That is so awesome. Another moment that I really loved was right at the beginning of the film where Tony decides that he's going to help the Avengers out, and he returns Cap's shield to him.
And then all the crap falls out of the car.
Yeah. And he's like, keep this quiet. I didn't bring enough for everybody. But it's just, they're just, there's so many, like, if it seems like we're kind of scattershot in how we're talking about this movie, it's because there's just so much going on and so many awesome moments that it's hard to pick just like one or two to talk about. Because we know that we only have so much time, and if we talk about this moment, we can't talk about this other moment over here. And it's just, yeah, go see this movie. That's all I'm going to say. Go see this movie.
Absolutely. If you've invested any significant time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you need to see how this ends. You need to see how the story comes to an end for now. And that's the biggest thing to remember. This is just the end of the Infinity Saga. What comes up next may be better. Who knows?
Yeah, so it's just so much to see. So let's talk really briefly about the presentation of this film, the visuals, the music, and all that and that kind of thing. So, Mike, what did you think of the presentation of this movie?
I thought it was great. I mean, one of the best things I liked about this movie was its pacing. 3 hours went by really goddamn quick. I didn't even notice. This movie felt like an hour and a half long because they crammed in so much, but it never felt bloated. It never felt like it kept you engaged the whole time. I can't think of any long movie that kept you engaged that long. I can think of slow moments in Titanic, Dances with Wolves, and The Godfather where you're like, I could go take a piss right now. Yet in this movie, you don't feel that need. That's an amazing accomplishment of editing and pacing.
Yeah, that really was. Like you said, this doesn't feel... It doesn't feel like 3 hours, but at the same time, it feels longer. like, because there's so many awesome things going on that you come out of it and you're like, wow, did only 3 hours pass? If that makes any real sense. It's like, because you get so invested in what's going on that you hang on every single moment as it occurs, so that by the end of it, like, it's I don't know, it's at the same time, it feels like it's quicker than 3 hours, but at the same time, it also feels longer, but in a good way, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, visually, I mean, just the set pieces and the fight choreography in this movie, like, you know, I've mentioned in the past that I'm a sucker for those really long take shots where it just kind of pans over a whole battlefield, you see like little snippets of it, and there were a lot of those awesome shots in this movie.
One of the things I really liked from an art design and prop design, I like how the Stark gauntlet looks, and then I like how it integrates where he basically he pulls an old Scooby-Doo tactic to suck the Infinity Stones off of Thanos's hand and then puts it into the iron armor. I like how that looks, and I love how that looks. In fact, I can't wait to see the art books that come out about this movie. Like you mentioned, caps, feathered, textured armor. It didn't look stupid. It looked incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Just, there are so many updates to costumes and armors that I really appreciated. Just, it's the little details, like how it calls back to the comics or a certain issue or a certain arc. I like how War Machine's armor now looks. It's been upgraded since. There's a lot to mention, and if I would be here all day if I just wanted to talk props and costume design, but no, everything here impressed the hell out of me. There wasn't any one thing I was disappointed. I wish we saw a little bit more of Ronan, but I got enough, and I was satisfied with it.
All righty. And so with that, we're kind of running short on time, so we'll start wrapping things up by giving our final rating on the film. As always, our ratings are see it now, wait for matinee, wait for DVD, wait for cable, don't even bother, and Brian's rating, fuck this movie. So, Mike, what is your final rating for Infinity War? Blah. What is your final rating for Endgame?
If you're going to see this, see it in the best possible position. See it with friends and family who will appreciate it with you. Basically, make this an experience. Because this is something you're going to remember for a really long time if you've been invested in any of the 22 movies previous to this. Make it an event showing for yourself, and you'll be really happy that you did.
All right, and I'm gonna echo the sentence. This is definitely a see it now movie. This is less a film and more of a cultural event. So it is, if you have followed the Marvel films at all over the last 22 films, last 11 years, you owe it to yourself to go and see this movie. And so with that is all the time that we have for Nerd to the Third Power this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We will see you next week. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm Mike the Birdman Todd.
All right, we'll see you next week. Taka, play us out.
Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.